This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, my name is Mary McConnell, reading sports news from ESPN.com, and this is for Friday, May the 3rd, 2024, from Radio Reading Services of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. We start off with an article entitled, Boxer Ryan Garcia Tested Positive for Banned Substance Osterion. Star boxer Ryan Garcia tested positive for the performance-enhancing substance Osterine the day before and the day of his upset win over Devin Haney last month, that per a voluntary anti-doping association letter sent to all parties Wednesday and obtained by ESPN. The urine samples were collected prior to the fight, but the results weren't known until later. Garcia has 10 days to request that his B sample be tested. Garcia's A sample also screened positive for 19 noradrenaline, but its presence is unconfirmed until further lab analysis. Everybody knows that I don't cheat, Garcia said in a video posted on X. Never taken a steroid. I don't even know where to get steroids. I barely take supplements. Big lies. I beat his ass. Oscar De La Hoya's Golden Boy Promotions said in a statement that it is working with Garcia's team to determine how this finding came to be. Ryan has put out multiple statements denying knowing using any banned substances, and we believe him, Golden Boy said in a statement. Garcia, 25, floored Haney three times and won by a majority decision, but that result now stands to be overturned unless the B sample returns negative, which quite frankly is rare. We learned about the situation not too long ago, and it's unfortunate Ryan cheated and disrespected both the fans and the sport of boxing by fighting dirty and breaking positive not once but twice, Haney said in a statement to ESPN. Quote, Ryan owes the fans an apology, and by his recent tweet, he still thinks this is a joke. We put our lives on the line to entertain people for a living. You don't play boxing. This puts the fight in a completely different light. Despite the disadvantage, I still fought on my shield and got back up. People die in this sport. This isn't a joking matter. Garcia, with 25-1 with 20 KOs, also missed weight ahead of the fight, registering 143.2 pounds for the WBC 140-pound title fight. Garcia put Haney, 31-1 with 15 KOs, upward of $600,000 for his failure to make the weight. It also meant Garcia was ineligible to win the title, though he rose to number two in ESPN's junior welterweight rankings following the major upset. Haney, who fights out of Las Vegas, remained the junior welterweight champion even in the defeat. He fell to number four, though, in ESPN's 140-pound rankings and lost his pound-for-pound recognition after being ranked number six by ESPN going into the fight. Safety, fairness, integrity in professional athletic competition are essential, the New York State Athletic Commission said in a statement to ESPN. The commission is in the communication with VADA and is reviewing this matter. Osterine is a selective androgen receptor modulator that attaches to proteins in the body and effectively tells muscles to grow. It is used to aid performance by helping athletes build muscle and enhancing the rate of fat loss and also to increase stamina and recovery ability. It has been on the World Anti-Doping Agency's banned list since 2008 and in 2022 was listed as an anabolic agent by WADA. Osterine has been used in boxing before. Lucien Bouda tested positive for it in 2016 following a draw with Boudou Jack in their WBC super middleweight title fight. The result was changed to DQ win for Jack. Amir Khan was handed a 2-year ban by UK anti-doping, UKAD, after he tested positive for Ostarine following his 6th-round TKO loss to Kell Brooks in 2022. Haney was a -900 favorite, according to ESPN BET, but he closed at -575 after Garcia missed weight. The slick boxing Haney, the former undisputed lightweight champion, had never been knocked down entering the fight, but Garcia deposited him on the canvas in rounds 7, 10, and 11 with his lightning-quick left hook to pull out the victory. The win was a career-altering performance for Garcia, who has never won a world title but boasts a massive social media presence with more than 12 million followers on Instagram. His lone career defeat came via 7th-round TKO versus Gervonta Davis back in April. Haney defeated future Hall of Famer Vasily Lomachenko last May to retain his 4-135-pound title. He made his 140-pound debut in December with a shutout decision victory over Regis Prograis to win the WBC junior welterweight title. More from ESPN.com. This article is entitled, Travis Kelce Wasn't Going to Hold Out, and he's grateful to the Chiefs for a deal. This article is written by Adam Tyker, a staff writer, again for ESPN. Travis Kelce informed the Kansas City Chiefs he wants a pay raise for the 2 seasons remaining on his contract, but knew he was making the request at a major negotiating disadvantage. Kelce wasn't going to hold out and get it. He wasn't even going to threaten to hold out. And the Chiefs, after 11 seasons with Kelce, were well aware. I'm not a guy that sits out, Kelce said on the New Heights podcast with his brother Jason. I'm not a guy that holds out. I'm a guy that loves coming into the building, and the Chiefs know that. So for them to want to get this done, for me knowing how much blood, sweat, and tears that I had put into the thing, I'm extremely grateful. The Chiefs this week gave Kelce the raise, one that makes him the highest paid NFL tight end with an average salary of $17.125 million over the next 2 seasons. Kelce had been scheduled to make about $12 million next season and $16.25 million in 2025. I'm so excited and so thankful to this organization for getting it done, making me feel appreciated and compensated the right way. And on top of that, I got to move the needle for the tight end room, he said. It's everyone else's job to keep making that tight end AAV, average annual value, go up and up with every single contract that's better than mine in the future. I'm so freaking thankful to General Manager Brett Veach and President Mark Donovan and Coach Andy Reid. Big Red, I love you, big guy. And obviously, Clark Hunt, who's a team owner. The Hunt family has been unbelievable to not only myself and this Kansas City community, but they've just been so generous since I've been here, making me feel like I'm at home. For the past 11 years, I've been able to make this place exactly that, and I've loved every single second of it. And I'm going to love the next 2 years playing here in Kansas City, and we'll see what happens after that. Kelce's raise follows the new contract the Chiefs gave to defensive tackle Chris Jones back in March. The Chiefs also gave quarterback Patrick Mahomes a raise last fall. We got the nucleus together, and now we're paid, baby, Kelce said. Everybody got paid this offseason, and that's a very good thing. More from ESPN.com, this one entitled, Governor's Office Bears New Stadium Proposal a Non-Starter. This is from the Associated Press and ESPN. The Chicago Bears' proposal to fund a new lakefront stadium remains a non-starter, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker's office said after top aides met with the team, officials said on Wednesday. The Bears unveiled a nearly $5 billion plan calling for public funding last week for an enclosed facility to be built next to their longtime home at Soldier Field. Though the governor did not rule out more discussions, the team clearly is facing an uphill battle. As the governor has said, the current proposal is a non-starter for the state, Press Secretary Alex Goh said in a statement. In order to subsidize a brand new stadium for a privately owned sports team, the governor would need to see a demonstrable and tangible benefit to the taxpayer of Illinois. The governor's office remains open to conversations with the Bears, lawmakers, and other stakeholders, with the understanding that responsible fiscal stewardship of the taxpayer dollars remains the foremost priority. Pritzker's chief of staff, Anna Caprero, and deputy governor, Andy Menar, met with the Bears, who called it a productive conversation. "We shared a commitment to protecting the taxpayer of Illinois and look forward to further discussions," the team added. The Bears' plan calls for $3.2 billion for the new stadium, plus an additional $1.5 billion in infrastructure. The team in the city said the project would add green and open space while improving access to the city's museum campus. The proposal calls for $2.25 billion from the Bears, $300 million from the NFL, it's a loan, and $900 million in bonds from the Illinois Sports Facility Authority. The funding from the ISFA would involve extending bonds of an existing 2% hotel tax. Now, Mayor Brandon Johnson gave a full-throated endorsement last week, saying the project is in line with Daniel Burnham's plan of Chicago. He said there will be no tax hikes or new taxes for Chicago residents, but Pritzker and other state legislators are skeptical of the plan. The Bears spent $197.2 million more than a year ago to purchase the site of the shuttered Arlington International Racecourse. They're from Churchill Downs Incorporated. They envision building a stadium on the 326-acre tract of land. It's some 30 miles northwest of Soldiers Field, with restaurants, retail, and more on the property, all for about $5 billion with some taxpayer help. The Bears had said they would pay for the stadium in Arlington Heights with taxpayer dollars covering infrastructure costs such as roads and sewers. Those plans stalled, though, with the team citing a property assessment. It said it was just plain too high. Now we're going to turn to baseball on ESPN.com, for were suspended for their roles in the Brewers-Rays brawl. Three Milwaukee Brewers, including manager Pat Murphy and Tampa Bay Rays outfielder Jose Siri, received suspensions for the roles that led to a bench-clearing incident between the two teams in the eighth inning of a game Tuesday night. Brewers starting pitcher Freddie Peralta received a five-game suspension for intentionally throwing at Siri during the top of the sixth inning at the Brewers' 8-2 victory, while reliever Abner Uribe received 6 games after he and Siri squared off against each other 2 innings later. Siri received a 3-game suspension that was later reduced to 2 games, while Murphy will miss 2 games as a result of Peralta's actions, in addition to his inappropriate conduct towards an umpire. All 4 were also fined. Siri's penalty was reduced when he reached an agreement with Major League Baseball after he appealed. He served the first game as the Rays lost 7-1 on Wednesday. Uribe and Peralta appealed to Major League Baseball's special assistant, John McHale Jr., and their discipline remained pending until the appeal is resolved. Later Wednesday, Uribe was optioned to AAA in Asheville. Now, under the rules, managers are not allowed to appeal. Murphy began serving his suspension on Wednesday. Peralta and Murphy were ejected after the right-hander hit Siri on a 3-0 pitch in the sixth. But tempers didn't flare up until the eighth, when Siri and Uribe had words as they crossed paths after the Rays outfielder grounded out to first base. Punches were thrown as both benches cleared and before order was restored shortly thereafter. The animosity between Siri and the Brewers had been building since he took a long look at his solo home run off Peralta in the third inning. Before Wednesday's game, Siri revealed a bruise on his left leg that formed after getting hit by a 3-0 fastball from Peralta. He was the one who threw first. I don't think I did anything bad, Siri said with an interpreter after the suspension was announced. Siri said he remained unsure why Uribe took a swing at him. When I was in the on-deck circle and he was warming up, I felt like he kept looking over at me and staring at me. So I just had that feeling, Siri said. Obviously, when I went to the first base, I confirmed that he had problems with me. Siri stressed Wednesday he has no dispute with Peralta. I never really had any problems with him, never have, he said. He hit me and I just went to first base. Siri said celebrations by pitchers and batters alike are part of the game, but insisted that he wasn't trying to show up Peralta. I didn't think I did anything wrong, he said. I stood there. I didn't look at it. I didn't put my head up. I just stood there and then I ran. Now we're going to turn to basketball again from ESPN.com. And this is entitled Celtics Closeout Heat in Game 5, Learning from Their Mistakes. The Boston Celtics pounded the shorthanded Miami Heat 118-84 on Wednesday to knock out the longtime rival in 5 games and advance to the Eastern Conference semifinals. In taking the series, Boston avenged its 2023 conference final loss to Miami, which was a number 8 seed. That's how it should be. We should be learning from our mistakes and things we could have done better and applying it to the next season because we're trying to have a different outcome this year, said Celtics star Jason Tatum, adding that the victory was necessary for Boston's maturation as a team. The first round matchup ended almost exactly the way it started, with Boston connecting early from deep while the Heat struggled from the outside. The Celtics drilled 16 three-pointers and hit 40% of their tries, while Miami was 3 of 29 from three-point territory. The series itself was never truly in doubt. Even after record-breaking shooting performances from the Heat in Game 2, Eric Spoelstra's club, realizing it would need to launch more threes to stay competitive, hit 23 of its 43 triples in that contest to stun Boston and its fans 111-101 and tie the series 1-1. But those 24 makes in Game 2, a franchise playoff record, were more than the 21 Miami could hit over the final 3 games of the series combined. In fact, the Celtics trailed for just 56 seconds total during their 4 victories in the series. Offense was consistently hard to come by for the Heat, who were missing starters Jimmy Butler with a knee injury and Terry Rozier with a neck injury. Rookie starter Jaleem Jacquet Jr. strained his hip flexor and missed Game 5 as well. Miami finished with fewer than 90 points in each of the last 3 games. Bam Adebayo paced the Heat in Game 5 with 23 points and 6 assists. Boston, on the other hand, looked in during the first game this postseason without Kristaps Porzingis, who suffered a right calf strain, and that will keep him out for at least the next week. Guard Derek White starred again Wednesday, scoring a game-high 25 points 2 nights after he torched Miami for a career-best 38. This 13 three-pointers in the past 2 games are the most by a Celtics player over the 2-game postseason span. That's according to ESPN stats and information. White's emergence illustrates why Jaylen Brown feels it's too simplistic to suggest that Brown and Tatum need to do more offensively with Porzingis out. I think we're just going to have to continue to play our game like we've been doing our whole career and continue to show our growth by trusting our teammates, Brown said. I think if you're going to win, you're going to win only as a team. Boston now awaits its second round opponent. The 4th seed Cavs lead the 5th. Game 6 is scheduled to start today in Orlando. And we're going to take a look right now at NASCAR. And this again is from ESPN.com. Denny Hamlin holds off Kyle Larson to snag a cup win in Dover. Denny Hamlin called his shot ahead of Dover, guaranteeing a win on his podcast, then followed through with his bold boast that would have made the Bambino proud and held off Kyle Larson down the stretch to park his Toyota in victory lane. Hamlin wiggled past lap traffic and never let Larson squeak by him over the final laps in the showdown between the two of NASCAR's elite drivers and won the Cup race by about a quarter of a second. This happened Sunday at Dover Speedway. "You better win if you're going to open up your mouth, that's for sure," Hamlin said. Hamlin has the victory lane celebration down pat this season. He celebrated last week at Talladega Super Speedway in his role owner 23XI Racing with Tyler Reddick took the checkered flag. Hamlin's contribution was a bit overshadowed by his fellow team owner, Michael Jordan. For the first time since he became a NASCAR Cup team owner, to savor in person a victory by one of his drivers. Hamlin took his turn in the spotlight this week with the Monster Trophy as a driver for the Joe Gibbs Racing team at Dover. "It's a little bit different when you win yourself as a car owner," Hamlin said. Hamlin knew the win was coming, or at least publicly he was willing to say he did, going so far as to call his shot. He even referenced Babe Ruth on the podcast that he would master the Monster Mile. "I'm going to call it right now. We're going to win in Dover," Hamlin said last week, on Action's Detrimental. Got it? Got it. Hopefully some listeners of Action Detrimental maybe cashed in today, Hamlin said. Hamlin led 136 of the 400 laps and won at Dover for the second time in his career. Perhaps fittingly, the Babe wore number 3 for the New York Yankees, and there was Hamlin and the rest of his number 11 team flashing 3 fingers in tribute to the team's 3rd win of the season. Hamlin's 3 wins tie him with William Byron for the most this season in a series. Hamlin also picked up his 54th career Cup win, all with Joe Gibbs Racing. He's tied with Lee Petty for the 12th on the career Cup list. "I couldn't hold Lee Petty's helmet," Hamlin said. The tone for the season was set from the opener when Hamlin also won the Clash at the Coliseum exhibition race. Larson finished 2nd and nipped at Hamlin's bumper for most of the final 25 laps and seemed on the brink of passing the Toyota. Larson's number 5 Chevrolet couldn't close the deals on the mile concrete track. Hamlin took the lead off a restart with 81 laps left and never let go, repeatedly choking off Larson's Chevy at the top of the track. "I just couldn't really do anything," Larson said. "Nothing could generate enough speed to get close enough to do anything." Hamlin was soundly booed as he grabbed the checkered flag, boos louder than usual at the track because of the surprisingly full grandstands. After rainouts forced Monday races, each of the last 2 years, the sun came out on Sunday and so did the fans. The grandstands were packed and the track came close to its 54,000 capacity. While NASCAR tracks do not release attendance numbers, the crowds easily were the largest at Dover, largest that they've seen at least since the pandemic. There was a multi-car wreck with 71 laps left in the race that took out Christopher Bell, Bubba Wallace, and William Byron. Coming off a restart, Zane Smith appeared to get into the left rear of Wallace's Toyota, which sent him into traffic and into Byron and Bell. Wallace was running 11th at the time of the wreck, Bell was 16th, and Byron was 18th. A year after the Truex brothers swept over, Ryan Truex won the Xfinity race, Martin Truex the Cup race. They failed to repeat, though. Ryan Truex went back-to-back and won a 2nd straight Xfinity race on Saturday. Martin Truex won the first stage of the race and led 69 laps before he suffered damage to the nose of his Toyota. "Feel like we let one get away today," Martin Truex said. "You can't lose control of these races mid-stage like that. The track changes. You can't get behind." Up next, well, Kansas City Speedway is next, where Hamlin is defending. He is the defending race winner. "I'm not going to call any shots just yet," Hamlin said, laughing on his podcast. Well, that wraps up sports from ESPN.com. And this is for Friday, May the 3rd, 2024. My name is Mary McConnell. Thank you.